we... 6:13, thank you. Yes, we did meet on 6:13 on a negotiation matter, and no action was taken in that closed session meeting. Tonight, we have met in closed session to discuss our superintendent's evaluation, the status of negotiations, pending litigation, one case, and anticipated litigation, one case, and direction was given to staff on all those matters, but no action was taken. And now we are in open session, and I'd like to ask the board if there is any change to the order of business that they would like. Mrs. Botwin?
Yes, I was wondering how the board would feel about moving up the election of the president to right after the little celebration, Patty, for you. So that with the correspondence afterward, that the new president would start with that as official president.
I wouldn't have a problem with moving that item. I will say that I am going to ask the board if they would like to table it when we get there because of the fact that Mr. Millar is not here, Dave Peters is in the audience, and I think he has much more right and need to vote on that matter than I do, and Mr. Spadafore is absent. So you really would only have you would have four people here who could vote, which would require unanimity. And so I'm going to ask the board if they want to table it and make a motion to that effect, and it'll play out as it does. And we can do that earlier if the board would like, just to get that out of the way, or we can take it when it comes up in the agenda. What's the board's pleasure?
Like to continue as we had planned because we knew it was going to be tonight, and I don't think there'll be much problem with our president and clerk.
Well, except for the fact that Dave can't vote and Mr. Millar can't vote and Mr. Spadafore can't vote. So when we get to that, we can argue that. Does anybody want to take it early? Okay. All right, then we will, right after the presentation.
I'm okay with keeping it the way it is. I'm
sorry. Okay.
I'm happy to have you be president for a little bit longer. I know Mrs. Bowen has an interest in moving along, but throw the bum out. Yeah, I like you, and I'd like to keep you for a little bit longer anyway.
Okay. I think we'll wait, Mrs. Botwin, with the board consensus being leaning that way slightly. Okay. Then the next thing we'll do is have a motion to approve the minutes. Anyone care to make a motion or some corrections?
Just a housekeeping on the first page of the June 6th. It said the open session board president Andreen, and I believe that was the clerk Chris Unger as acting president. Right in the middle under open session on June 6th.
That's right, because I didn't get there till 6:47. So do you want to make that change, Mrs. Holmes? Okay, and then anything else? I wanted to point out on page 5, it looks like Mr. Millar gave us the budget report, but I think that was Mr. Miller. Okay, do you want to change that too, Mrs. Holmes? Anything else? Those two are interchangeable sometimes. Okay. With those changes, is there a motion to approve the minutes of June 6th and June 13th?
I'll move to approve the...
And I'll move to approve the minutes of June 6th and June 13th, I believe.
Yeah. And I'll second.
Okay. Motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. So it passes 4-0 with one abstention by Mrs. Dickinson. And next is a presentation. And Dr. Valentine?
I thought I would take the opportunity to stand in front of the board at this particular moment because it's an important occasion for us and a very important occasion for me as well. We all know that Board President Patty Andreen will be moving to Maryland, probably within the next 2 or 3 days, if my understanding.
All goes well.
we're hoping that all goes well, but if you'd like to stay a little longer, we'd certainly extend that invitation to you. And just kind of gathering my thoughts about Patty as we say goodbye to her, not just as board president, but goodbye from the board, at least for the time being, that some words come to mind, and I wanted to share some of those, if I might. The first word that occurs to me is the word courage. Today is what Patty was yesterday and is what Patty will be tomorrow. She is a whole human being. She represents the values that that she cherishes completely consistently. And as issues come before the board, you can count on Patty to process those questions, those vital questions for the children of our community, through that very, very profound value system that she has. The next word is intelligence. And frankly, many of the decisions that a school board makes and that I honor the difficulty of you all making them are not clear-cut. They're not decisions in which the outcome is certain or that the rationales that go behind the items that come forward are just slam-dunk kinds of things. To listen to Patty is to understand what the issues in the issues are. To listen to Patty is to understand the complexity of what is going on. And finally, maybe the greatest intelligence of all, to listen to Patty is to be able to unscramble that and come up with a decision that makes sense to people of good reason and common sense. Patty is, for all of the power that a school board has over a school district, Patty has never lost sight of the fact that her position is one of service. And the service is not primarily to colleagues on the board. Her service is not primarily to staff, although she reveres those folks, but service to children. And that the purpose of the board, there is no money to be made sitting on a board. There, frankly, is very little thanks to be garnered by working on a board. But what there is satisfaction that the work of a school board is meaningful and that the work of the school board supports the lives and the hearts of children. And Patty embodies that commitment to service. And so tonight, I just want to share a simple thank you, Mrs. Andreen, for all the years of service. We asked Patty about what might be a fitting farewell, and Patty, with typical self-effacing, said, I don't need and I don't want anything to be given, plaques and those kinds of things. And in a way, that wouldn't be very Patty-like to begin with, so we wanted to contemplate something else. Patty, we're going to be donating a book to the San Luis Obispo High School Library in your name.
Thank you.
And apparently a crown and a paper windmill as well. I believe, Kim, we haven't arrived at the title yet of that book. Is that correct? Well, I think it's important. It is a challenge, and I'll tell you why I think it is a challenge. We want to pick a book that is substantial and appropriate enough to honor the occasion on which it is donated to the library. But we don't want to give something so good and so grandiose and so final that you feel like, well, I couldn't really come back in good conscience after that. So we're not giving the Oxford English Dictionary to San Luis Obispo High School in the hopes that maybe after a couple of years in Maryland you might come back to San Luis Obispo. I know you contemplate that as a possibility. And we may be saying hello as joyfully, perhaps, as we are sadly saying goodbye tonight. So anyway, I would just ask our colleagues here and those of us in the audience who've been with Patty for so long to join me in congratulating Patty on her future and thanking her for her past. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Valentine. Thank you so much.
If I may, at this point, we have scheduled a reception for Patty. However, before we do that, Mr. Evans has written that he would like to speak on this occasion as well. So if I could invite Mr. Evans to come up at this time.
Thank you. It's better to do this before the celebration than after, I think. And so I appreciate that, Mr. Unger. On behalf of the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, we want to say thank you for your years of service, for the fact that you resurrected yourself once to come back to the board. We appreciate that. Serving all the community, in literally. I think I will, much that Dr. Valentine said I could echo, but I think I want to talk about how accessible you were. And I do appreciate the fact that you could sort of, after all...
Counting house. So I'm going to be wearing a lot of orange. as I walk through town, I'll be keeping my eyes open for duck hunters. The privilege of serving on this board has been one of the great things that I will remember from my time in San Luis Obispo. I'm not going to cry. I already did. it will be one of the great things that I remember from my time. This is where my daughter received her education through graduation, which was last week. And I'm so proud that she's a graduate of this district's schools. She was able to fulfill her dream of being accepted into a wonderful university, thanks to the faculty, thanks to the counselors, thanks to the administrators, and thanks to the board of this district that have provided an excellent education for our children. I couldn't be happier with what she takes from San Luis Coastal. I couldn't be happier with what I take. The memories of working with this board will keep me nurtured for a long time. I really am so sorry I'm crying this much. I'm sure I wasn't going to, because I'm very happy. When I left the board before, I didn't feel a sense of closure. Now I do. I've had the thrill of seeing the transition to a new superintendent who has really found a way to change our focus from cutting the budget to closing the achievement gap and to working on behalf of those who don't have the voice to speak for themselves. The at-risk kids, the special ed. It's just very moving to me that the board has committed to help those kids. One of the things I'm proud of is that when I came on the board, our teachers were seriously underpaid. It was humiliating that we had some of the best faculty in the county, and they were underpaid. And now we still have some of the best faculty in the county, though we're losing a few. and they are paid as well as we think we can at this point, and we have brought them up. I hope they're number one in the county now. I said that once before that they were, and we hadn't quite gotten there yet, but I hope that they now are. And that I hope that we're able to keep the resources to do that by making the kinds of prudent decisions. I speak to Ed Valentine's leadership in closing the achievement gap. I want to speak to Russell Miller and to the people that are working on the business decisions, Brad. I'm extremely proud that this district is being so proactive in managing its properties to generate revenue to help teachers find houses. I don't know who else is doing that, and these people are in the forefront. We're supporting them and very, very happy to do that. Dr. Matakovich, I don't even know what to say about her, except that I think Pete knows her best, and he calls her Santa Maria de Avila, and I think that's pretty close to the way I view her. Mary would do anything large or small that she could to make someone's life a little better. Now, I'm working around down here at this end, and I'm going to talk about Kim. The most ultimately organized professional person I've ever worked with. She bails us out when we don't have things we should have. She reminds us to do things. She makes all of us look a lot better than we really are. Thanks, Kim. And the rest of the board, those that are here tonight and those that aren't here, every one of them has given me a tremendous ability to understand their different perspectives and to work together to help the district be all that it can. I'll speak to them individually about what they mean to me as people. I can't go through that now, or I really will fall apart, but I'm tremendously proud to serve with these people and with Walter and John, and I'm very happy that Dave is going to be coming on the board because I think he's going to add a lot. There are two people I have to speak to out here, Mary Jo and Kathy. Our board watchers, you are symbolic of the public that we serve, and whenever we see you out there, it reminds us that it's not just about us, it's about the public, and I appreciate your hours coming to these meetings, serving on committees, taking us aside and giving us your viewpoint, and just the encouragement that we get again someday, and thank you all. And I love my... Should we just keep right on going, or did you want to stop for a minute? Okay, we'll stop for a minute, unless anybody else... Chris? Okay.
And you know, with all the laudatory things that have been said about you, Patty, I don't know how much more I can add, but there are a couple of things, never being one to be short for words. If you remember a few years ago, when David Pollack, who was the president of the California School Board Association, was in San Luis Obispo County, the story goes that he was at, I believe, the Madonna Inn, to looking through the TV channels and happened upon our board meeting. And the report we got was that our school board ran a model meeting. If he made that comment, I understand, in front of the delegates at the Delegate Assembly of the California School Boards Association. Now, I don't know how much more complimentary things get. And you were on the board then. And I think what that does is it says, talks about how good a board that we really are, not only hopefully to the people in our area, but I think statewide. And you were a part of that. We couldn't have done it without you. And then the other thing I just want to leave you with is you taught me to appreciate fine women's footwear. and I appreciate that. And next time I go through, every time I go through Nordstrom's now, I do look at the women's footwear section. Like, you know, Patty would have liked that. So thank you, Patty.
Okay, we're in recess to have a little cake, and then we'll be right back. Thanks.
And we have three requests to speak. The first is Rob Edemiller regarding public participation in the Fairview school site.
My name is Rob Edemiller, Madam President, members of the board. I'm here tonight representing Eleanor Garcia. Eleanor lives at 1710 Tor Creek Road. The topic I'd like to talk about is the old Fairview school site. There's been, I would say probably for the last 10 years, the Garcias, who live on Toro Creek and have lived and resided there for a number of years, basically they have tried to approach the district because of the problems that are specific to about a three-quarter acre site along that road, which is right near Toro Creek. The issue primarily being one of liability for the district and one being the types of folks that hang out there, namely the vagrants, the campers, the picnickers, the bicyclists, and so on, who leave the trash and basically create a nuisance for many of the people that reside along Toro Creek, specifically the Garcias, who own the property right across this, the creek. Excuse me, right across the road. Well, if you look at what's taken place to date as far as a chronology of events, there's been some dialogue between the Garcias and the district. There's been dialogue between myself and Mr. Parker of the district, specifically about what the disposition of that. The Garcias have approached the district to try to purchase that property, cordon off that property, fence off that property, and make it so that it's inaccessible. Basically, what we have here is a situation from a safety standpoint where the property sits around 25 feet above the creek. It's almost a straight drop-off. That creek is eroding that piece of property every year. Pretty soon, there's not going to be a piece of property there. To give you a little history, it was the Garcia's land that the old Fairview School was put on since 1935, not this property. There's a lot of issues that were raised in an appraisal report that was paid for by, half of it was paid for by the Garcias, the other half by the school district, which is full of errors, omissions, and what it basically arrives at is a false conclusion about what the property is worth. All the Garcias are asking is that there be a dialogue. They tried to approach the district. Some of the responses they got were, well, if you don't like what you're hearing, why don't you bring this up with the board? That's why I'm here tonight. I'm bringing it up with the board. There are issues with this document, the appraisal report that was paid for, like I said, half by the district and half by Ms. Garcia. There are errors. There's omissions. There's just flat-out biased remarks in it. And so if a decision is going to be made about the disposition of the property, it'd be great for educators to base their fact on fact, not on fiction. And all we're asking for is that this be heard, maybe through an agenda item on an upcoming board meeting. If you wish to talk to the Garcias in a close...
ask Mr. Parker at a future meeting to update us on the discussions that the 7-Eleven committee has been having. I think that would be the way that we would need to proceed, because I don't believe we can dispose of property without that process.
Just so the board knows, is that any disposition of property is takes place in a very prescribed manner with very specific rules about how we do it. One of the first steps is, as Mr. Unger says, the 7-Eleven committee. And the 7-Eleven committee concluded its meetings last week. We have a recommendation for the board. I think you've seen the preliminary documents on that issue, and we will be presenting it as a board item in the near future when the board agenda permits. It's not necessarily an item of great import, great timeliness for us, but it is something that will come forward in the very near future with all of the supporting recommendations from the 7-Eleven committee and the documents that we've gotten together at this point.
Without discussing this too much, because we can't discuss things that aren't on our agenda, when would you anticipate that we would have enough data to discuss this item in open session?
As soon as the board agenda permits time. You know, it'd be August to be our first meeting that it's possible, the first meeting in August.
No, August 22nd.
August 22nd, I'm being told now by the boss lady over here. So it'd be August 22nd would be our first opportunity.
Thank you.
Okay, so should we talk about that, if at all, during advance agenda then? Okay. Thank you for bringing that forward. Is there anybody else for public session, Mr. Rucker? Public comment, I mean?
Mr. Kratzer.
Good evening, board. Colby Kratzer speaking as an individual this evening. It came to my attention when I became aware that Don Schallenberger at Del Mar School had addressed the Moore Bay City Council, suggesting that it was a poorly thought out idea, and actually a poor idea, to have an unfenced area for dogs to run off leash at Del Mar Park, which is perfectly adjacent to Del Mar School. And my purpose is simply to urge you to put the weight. I mentioned to Don that I thought the school board had already mentioned that they were against this idea. And he said no, that he presented as an individual. So I thought I'd bring it before the board, give you an opportunity. When I disseminated the information, it was Friday. It was just after you'd had your agenda posted to you. So I think it would require some advice from your legal representative about how one puts an emergency resolution before you on the agenda tonight. The Morbid City Council has requested for public input as to setting their priorities, including this dog park idea, for their June 26th meeting, so you won't convene again prior to that. If you have any questions, I'm available to answer those.
Thank you. Anybody have a question? Mrs. Baldwin?
Yes, Colby, on this, the plans are, according to this note, that the park will not have a fence around it as they're setting it up now. Is that correct?
Correct.
It'll be an open, unfenced dog run park.
There are fences, and I think maybe some of them are part of the park or simply an integrated fence protecting private property to the north. But there's no fence between Del Mar School and Del Mar Park at present.
And this is right across the road from the school. Is that correct?
There's not even a road. It's just simply adjacent. You take one step from the park and you're on school grounds.
So at any time that the dog park is open during the course of the day, the dogs will be free range back and forth. Balls will be thrown back and forth and so on.
That's the general idea of an off-leash park, but typically they are fenced with a large perimeter fence in places where that's established. That would seem to be a prudent precaution. What I'm suggesting is that without that fence, such use should not be permitted, in that the municipal ordinance in the city of Morro Bay does not allow dogs off-leash in their public parks. This would be a special variation of that ordinance because there are citizens that would like to have a place in town to run their dogs, similar to how they the state allows them to do it on the beach north of North Point, if you know the geography there. It's a fairly common public need for people that own dogs to like to throw the ball so their dog can run and socialize with other dogs. This site, I just think, is a particularly poorly thought out site if they're moving forward with it. The weight of your board, I'm sure, would be welcomed and influential in discouraging the idea here. Not that anyone's against a park. If that's a public need and the municipal government wants to provide that, they need to do it responsibly.
Thank you.
Just a question on procedure. Is there any way that we can support Don Schallenberger's position?
What Mr. Krotzer talked about, and I think that we as a board would certainly support our students being able to go to school in a safe environment, and I would suspect that that's part of our board policy anyway, and so I would think that if board members or administration wanted to attend a meeting and discuss our board policy regarding safety, that would be appropriate.
And also, if you want to give the email address for Mayor Peters so that anyone in the audience might want to do that, it would be appropriate.
Sure. The Morro Bay website is www.morro-bay.ca.us. And the mayor's business email, which is publicly available, is flamingos@charter.net, flamingos@charter.net.
Okay. Mrs. Bowen?
Yes, I have another comment, Colby. If you wanted to do this, might be a possibility. Or we have been talking about it, and you've been talking about it. If you want to get a tape or CD from AGP and edit it out where you could actually present that at the meeting, our discussion about our concerns about the park needs to be fenced in for the security of the students so that they would be able to see it could be another little push.
Well, I wanted to make this as simple as possible.
Yeah.
And if you can do the resolution, that's probably the easiest way. If that's not allowable tonight, the offer for some of you or staff to attend that city council meeting, I think, would be very persuasive. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. I just don't feel comfortable taking any action because I really don't think we can qualify it as an emergency. Mrs. Botwin? Mrs. Dickinson.
How does it? I mean, it doesn't have to be a big emergency. Can't the board, for pretty much for any reason, call a special meeting as long as they announce it, you know, 24 hours and post it and all that?
Yeah.
I mean, you could have a little meeting where I'll get together and vote yes on this thing for 10 minutes, as long as everyone knew about it. I don't know if the board wants to do that, but I think you could call a little meeting.
We could do a special meeting on 24 hours notice. We could.
We can.
Dr. Valentine?
That's one option. If you would like to direct staff to convey the message in person at the board meeting, that might be just as effective as the resolution. And I could take that by consensus.
I would be happy with that. Yeah. Are you okay with that? All right.
Yeah.
Consensus,
yeah,
then, that the Dr. Valentine would express the viewpoint of supporting Don Schallenberger and the position he expressed.
Mrs. Andreen?
Yes.
I'm just wondering, for board members who may wish to attend that meeting, if Mr. Kratzer, based on your former life, do you know the place and time of the meeting?
Indelibly, yes. They meet the second and fourth Mondays of the month, so that'll be the 26th at 6 p.m. at Vets Memorial Hall on Surf Street. 6 o'clock is the public comment period. One would have to access the agenda to know exactly when this taking of public input for setting priorities is, I think, the general label of the agenda item that the board has put forward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, the next comment, Mr. Unger?
Mr. Click.
And Mr. Click is here, as we discussed earlier, to speak to us on behalf of PFLAG, and we did give him up to 6 minutes when we discussed this last time to present the follow-up to our study session.
Right. And thank you. As you said, I'm Steve Click. I'm a retired Alaskan teacher, elementary teacher, who came here about 5.5 years ago to the Central Coast. I am a substitute in the district here, and I'll also be doing a summer school session at C.L. Smith starting next Monday. Tonight I'm speaking for myself and on behalf of the parents, families, and friends of lesbians and gays, Central Coast chapter, and Becky Jorgensen, the president, was going to be here, but she's unable to attend. We wanted to thank the board for the study session that you had about a month and a half ago, and especially the part when so many students were able to speak about the situations of harassment, bullying, the anti-bullying going on in the schools, and you taking your time and listening to them. They came from a variety of experiences, both on both sides of the issue and that kind of thing. So we really appreciate that you were able to make that happen. About 2 weeks after that board study session, I was able to work with another PFLAG member and work with the staff here at Los Osos. Character privilege, the attitude, wonderful signs, and the things that we want our students to be able to experience in school, have the pleasure of being here, wanting to come to school to learn so that they can be happy, productive members in our society. I gave each of you, or through your secretary here, information about PFLAG, and the next sheet was of the Safe Schools. This is the first sheet is what we gave the staff members as they came in at their, it was a staff meeting. And just, you know, had them think about some things. And the back part was basically the presentation that Rosie Lusardi and I presented with some of the things that we were talking about. The italics is sort of what we were discussing with the staff members. And then the last page came through the mail from a friend, a USA Today article about a moral battleground, a civil discourse. And it comes up with some ideas as to how two different sides of the situation can have disagreement, but they can do it in a civil manner so that both sides have the respect. There are certain rights In this case, it was religious liberty and the freedom of expression, and then the responsibilities of being able to have these discussions, and then the respect between both sides. Although you may not come up with the end result of something that's agreeable to both sides, at least you have the respect that each side has the right to have that particular belief. At the training here at Los Osos, we used part of this tape. It's called Let's Get Real. It's where real students talk about real issues, and it just isn't gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth, but it's all kinds of kids discussing about the name-calling and bullying. And so it covers a whole myriad of situations. And then we also left a workbook, which are wonderful lesson plans that could be used by staff. We left that with the librarian here. In the past, we've done that with the schools where we do give presentations. They're age-appropriate presentations for staff members, and we do leave age-appropriate materials so that they can further have that. One of the important issues that we brought up was AB 537, which is the California Student Safety and Violence Prevention Act of 2000, and whether or not staff members realize the importance of this act and the inclusion and the changes that happened in 2000, including sexual orientation and people perceived to have certain sexual orientation and the protection that those students and staff members have in state statute. Quite a few people were sketchy on what their responsibilities as school employees are. And so that's one thing that we helped on that. Our emphasis with PFLAG is to protect students and staff members, to have it a safe school for everyone involved. And in the past, we've also provided a book for each of the school libraries, age-appropriate book that went through your normal process of reviewing from your library review committee. And we were able to do that, and hopefully they're being used. And if you have any questions, please contact PFLAG. My name's on the first sheet here. Rosie's our PFLAG coordinator for the Safe Schools or any of the hotlines that we have. So thank you very much for your time and for your positive response for the safety of all of our students.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for timing your speech so perfectly and for reporting back to us, because we do like to hear what happens after the study session. So
thank you.
Thanks a lot. Anything else from the board? Mrs. Dickinson?
I just thought, in case someone was listening to Steve Quick, that PFLAG hotline is 438-3889. Is that a good number for people to have? 438-3889.
Okay. Anything else from public comment, Mr. Unger? All right, then we'll move on to reports by school staff. Anyone? Or student representatives, we don't have here, and no staff tonight, so we'll move to the budget. Mr. Miller?
Thank you. Once again, for the 21st consecutive year, the legislature has not reported out a budget to the governor on time. However, they are 99.9% done. There's one issue that they are in disagreement about. It is about providing health benefits to children of illegal immigrants, and they are unable to agree upon how that should be constructed, so that has held up the reporting of the budget to the governor. The governor's budget has been altered by the legislature, as we've talked about, and there hasn't been many changes in the last 2 weeks for the educational.
And I think the message that I would like to share is that local school boards do keep their fingers on the pulse of the needs of their children, and money that flows to school districts, great as it is, I believe that we as school board members should be able to look at the needs of our children and make the kinds of decisions that we need in order to make sure that our children are progressing adequately.
Well, is this on? I don't know. No strings on the money means we still wouldn't have no strings program. I think that the money that's designated for art and music I hope that it does stay designated for that, because I think it's too easy for districts to say our reading program needs more money or a math program, and I think that money that's just for art and music should stay just for that purpose. Did you make that point to the New Times?
We'll see what they think I said. In general, the CSBA position is that districts would prefer to have the discretion to apply the monies where they're needed, so I supported that. But I also said that we have made it a high priority to put money towards arts, music, counseling, and then I talked about closing the achievement gap. So I hope it comes across pretty reflective of where we are. We'll see. The next thing is, I'm a little confused because it's shown as a consent item, but we're going to take it discussion. Okay, the next item is approval to pay board member salary. Do you want to abstain from this? Okay. So it'll just be the four of us then that can vote on this because it concerns Mrs. Dickinson's absence. She's had an illness, and we're so glad she's back tonight.
It wasn't really an illness. It was a fractured pelvis, which is a little different than
illness. She had an owie. She had a bad owie. Anyway, she missed some meetings, and we would like to deal with this item. Is there a motion for number three?
I move that we approve to pay the board member salary for permissible absence or alternate meeting.
Motion by Mrs. Botwin. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So that passes 4-0 with one abstention. The next is the item that Mrs. Botwin referred to earlier about the election of the board president and the clerk. And I think that for my two cents, I don't have a need to participate in this personally, because I think that the officers should be selected by the board that will work with them. And my feeling is that Dave Peters, although he can't participate now, would be in a good position to help to select. So I would think that it would be a good idea to wait until after I've been sworn out and he's been sworn in. Also, Mr. Unger's absent, and he expressed to me that he would appreciate it if this were tabled so that he could vote on it when he comes back.
Well, isn't this just from now till...
Yeah, he's here.
I mean, Mr. Millar. I'm sorry, I meant Mr. Millar.
I have
he called about it.
Is this just from now until the election, though?
No.
This is from now for the whole next year.
Through the calendar year.
The calendar year.
So
we usually do this in December, though.
We usually do it in December, but it's always done, the second meeting in December or the first? It's always done the first meeting, and I think it's actually we have to do it the first meeting of every December. So it would be for about 6 months.
But we have to do something now since you're...
Well, Mr. Unger can serve. Well, I go off the board tonight. And Dave Peters would be available at the next meeting. Mr. Unger, just like he would if I were gone, could serve as chair for a meeting.
Madam Chair, I thought that your idea was very good, and I move that we continue as with Chris Unger, our board clerk, acting as president for the rest of this meeting. And he's done so well, such a good job on your absences and in closed session and open session both. And I feel very comfortable with him continuing it through till December. And I also agree that we should have probably all the board members should be present for at the next meeting, perhaps when everybody's there to elect the clerk and the president.
Okay, so Chris will just step in then when I'm not here.
I have a question.
I'm unclear.
Mrs. Yeah, why don't we just have Chris be the president until the election and have a temporary clerk?
Well, that's
and then in December, when we have a whole new board.
And I'll recognize the board members.
Yeah.
When we have a whole new board, then we, like we usually do in December, stick with our regular rhythm on that part of it.
We could do that.
Does that sound good?
And that's not my preference. My preference is that this be tabled till next week.
Board retreat of the 18th or 16th, whatever it is.
I'm throwing that out as a possibility, but I'm not going to make the motion because I don't think it's my place. I'll entertain a motion from anybody else. If everybody's finished discussing it. Mr. Unger, did you want to say something?
I would like to make a motion.
But you might not want to go for it. Well, I was just going to say, I think Mrs. Botwin has a motion on the floor. My understanding.
Is there a second for Mrs. Botwin's motion?
Well, I think we need to restate what Mrs. Botwin's motion is. But my understanding is, no matter what we do today or the next meeting, we will need to have a board reorganization the first meeting of December, when new board members are sworn in, and whatever decisions are made tonight or July 18th. Will absolutely be revisited whatever the first meeting of December is.
I have a question.
Mrs. Holmes is shaking her head, and so that means it's true.
I have a question about it. Don't we need, though, to have some work done by the president and the clerk before this retreat in July? And so, Chris, I think Chris should be the chairman, but I think if the four of us could choose someone to help.
The clerk
Chris.
Always serves. In the president's absence, the clerk always serves. It
yes.
doesn't take a motion to do that.
Okay. This is my thought, though. Why can't we just, the four of us, pick a clerk to work to help Chris get ready for the retreat and just to work till the election in December? Since that's not that big of a responsibility, I don't think it has to have a lot of weight. Like, this person has to be considered for ongoing. It could be just a very obviously temporary spot, and they could start tonight to help, because that's going to be some work, isn't it, to get ready for a retreat and plan what the agenda is and all that.
Mr. Unger, do you have a reaction to that? Do you need some help for that?
You know, I would be comfortable working with Dr. Valentine and listening to whatever the board is concerning the retreat. I'm a little nervous about having a temporary clerk, and I think my preference is to follow what your suggestion and to hold off on the election at all until we have seven board members here, including Mr. Peter. That would be my preference, is just to go with what we've got now and hold the election July 18th.
Do you want to go back to my motion that's still hanging off the cliff there?
Let's see if there's a second. Do you want to restate it, Mrs. Botwin?
Yes, I'd probably be a good idea if I restate it and get to finish it. Okay, I was going to move that we have Chris Unger continue as our president, acting president, and that we have at the next available meeting, we have the election of the president and clerk to continue so that we have all the board members present.
Are you talking about Just till December?
Just till December.
Does everybody understand the motion?
No, I still don't understand.
Okay, Mrs. Bauer, go ahead.
I move that.
Well, Mrs. Roger has a question. She doesn't understand the motion. Maybe you could.
I think she's trying to clarify it for me.
Okay.
I move that we have Chris continue, as he's done so well, as our acting president until the next board meeting, where we elect both the president and the clerk, who will continue to act for us until December.
Okay, I'm sorry that I had a hard time understanding it. I think I'm clear on it now. And I think that's what would happen routinely if we didn't take any action, because if the president's unable, the clerk steps forward. So I think that Chris would operate in that capacity until the next meeting, just routinely, wouldn't he?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So I don't. So do we need a motion to make that happen, or is that just the way protocol is?
Dr. Valentine?
Two things. Number one, I think a motion to table the item would seat Chris as acting president until the board took action, as Mrs. Roger just pointed out. So if there were a motion to simply table the process, only other clarification I would put in is that it's clear that Mrs. Andreen is. If we table it, this would be clear that Mrs. Andreen is president through the meeting tonight. We are beginning to encroach on the evaluation function of the meeting on July 18th, and that's perfectly okay as long as the board goes into that with eyes open. To postpone until August would not delay anything except the evaluation meeting having a different president other than Chris. And with that, the board can do what it wishes.
Can I just say one more thing?
Okay, we don't have a second yet for Mrs. Botwin's motion. So are you still looking for a second, Mrs. Botwin, or do you want to withdraw the motion?
No, I like that, that we appoint Chris to continue tonight for the rest of this board meeting to be our acting president, and at the next board meeting, elect the president and the clerk when we have all board members.
For until July 18th, and that the board appoint Mr. Spadafore in his absence to work with the acting president until to develop the July 18th agenda.
Second.
Yeah, I already seconded it.
Okay. That must be a vote. Motion by Mr. Unger. Second by Mrs. Dickinson. I will abstain. All in favor?
Aye.
Passes 4-0 with one abstention.
No.
Okay. Marilyn, I'm sorry. I thought I heard your voice.
No.
Well, okay. So there is no...
discussion first. I would like to hear Marilyn's idea.
Okay, Marilyn. Well, we've had a vote on it, so do you want to make another motion? We don't have that motion on the floor anymore, so go ahead, Mrs. Roger. I just took a vote, so...
But she didn't get to discuss.
Go ahead.
Well, you took a vote, and it was a 3-1 vote.
That's right. Correct.
Right.
Okay. So, well, my thought is that I think I have heard two people here express the same feelings that I have, which are that they would be in favor of Mr. Unger as president and Mr. Spadafore as clerk through or until the meeting in December when we would make a decision. So I'm thinking that if we're feeling the same way and if Mr. Unger is not opposed to accepting that position, then maybe we ought to just go ahead and vote.
I think so.
Yeah. So I will move that. Let's see. What would this motion sound like? That we, the board, appoints Mr. Unger as president and Mr. Spadafore as clerk
until our vote in December.
Our vote at the first meeting in December.
I second.
And I'd like, Madam Chair, if I could. Mrs. Holmes, in years past, this has been two separate motions. What's your feeling on that is our... And the other thing that I'd like to ask at this point is, Mr. Peter is in the audience, and I'd like to invite Mr. Peter, if he would like to have some input into this discussion right now as well.
As public comment?
And as well as anyone else, of course, in the public.
Okay. Any comments?
I don't think I have anything to add.
Okay. Perfect. Anyone else? All right, there's a motion to have Mr. Unger serve as chair and to have Mr. Spadafore serve as clerk. And there's a second.
Mrs. Roger, I'd like to ask for a friendly amendment, if I could, please. And that is that Mrs. Andreen would continue to serve until president at the end of this meeting. Would you accept that motion?
Absolutely.
Okay. So are we ready to vote? I'm still going to abstain. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That sounded like 4 that time. Okay, passes 4-0 with one abstention. It's done. All right. Well done.
Luckily, I asked Johnny to be...
Next, we're going to hear from Brad Parker on the employer-assisted housing program that was reported already in the Tribune. They stole a little of your thunder, Brad.
Well, that's okay.
That's good. That's good. Get the word out.
Good evening, members of the board. The real topic for tonight's discussion could rightly be entitled Employee Recruitment and Retention. The notion of some sort of employee housing assistance program is directly related to the high cost of housing in our area and the large numbers of staff retirements we are anticipating in the next 5 years. Our preliminary thinking on this matter is based on several findings, assumptions, and interests, and I'm going to list a few. That home ownership is largely beyond the reach of our new staff, even with a dual family income. That recruitment is somewhat dependent on home affordability, but that retention is largely dependent on home affordability. that the quality of our district is largely dependent on the quality of our teachers and staff. That approximately one-third of our teachers and one-third of our staff will be retiring in the next 5 to 7 years. That any home purchasing assistance not be a gift. That the fund used for home ownership assistance be 100% regenerative. That any funds used for home ownership assistance earn the same return for the district as they would have if they had been invested in the Local Area Investment Fund, or LAIF. That the district would not be interested in 5-year buyout is enough time for an employee to advance step, column, and COLA to be able to afford to buy out the district's interests in their home in 5 years. And we find that other colleges, cities, school districts are doing some form of employer-assisted housing. CSU Monterey, Cal Poly, University of Minnesota, University of Pennsylvania, University of California at Irvine, the City of Ventura, Santa Clara School District, City of Santa Barbara, City of LA, and San Jose. The concept program advanced in tonight's discussion would seem to satisfy the assumptions mentioned and just barely close the housing affordability gap between home cost and family income, as depicted in tonight's item. We used hypothetical figures that are perhaps not far off. I'll just go over those briefly. If we picked a target home purchase price of $450,000 and a $75,000 family income, co-ownership with the district share being a $100,000 co-ownership share, then the resulting $350,000 finance would represent about a 36% loan-to-income ratio. And that is at the upper end of the affordability spectrum. It doesn't make it easy. After 5 years, assuming a conservative step, column, and COLA increase of 4% a year, which I think is a conservative assumption, a family's income would have increased to $91,250 a year. The home value, if we assumed a 5% annual appreciation rate, would have increased to $574,000. A then restructured loan of $461,000 would allow the employee to buy out the school district's interest, finance the property with a first restructuring with CESLOC, and would result in an income ratio of approximately 38%. Still at the upper end of the affordability income, but doable. Obviously, these numbers are going to vary with every employee's family income, with the different home prices, but as an example, it helps to wrap your mind around what we're talking about. So neither of these loan-to-income ratios are comfortable for an employee, but they are achievable. Is a home in San Luis Obispo, Los Osos, or Morro Bay available for $450,000? Not many, if any, which leads to the idea that northern San Luis Obispo County and northern Santa Barbara County offer more affordable housing, and if commuting costs can be controlled, present real ownership opportunities for future employees. The discussion tonight is not intended to present the only option available for recruitment and retention. It's rather staff's best preliminary thinking to date, and I look forward to hearing the board's discussion and answering any questions.
Mm-hmm. Would you mind recapping for us the priorities that the 7-Eleven committee put forth on this? Or is that premature?
Not if you want to hear about it.
I didn't know if that report had been made public yet or...
It's a public medium that we held, so the recommendations from the 7-Eleven committee related to the Toro Creek property was to gain maximum cash value for that month, that piece of property, and sell it outright. For Johnson Avenue, the priority was to produce revenue, and within that produce revenue idea, there were three different scenarios. And as I recall, the first one was to Help me out, Brad.
First one was to sell it for highest and best value.
Highest and best
to be used
value.
Toward some form of employee-assisted housing.
So their recommendations were consistent with what you're putting forward. Is that correct?
Yes.
That was my recollection. Their highest priority wasn't to have the district actually develop the Johnson property, but to use the money to establish a sort of housing trust like the one you're describing.
And Madam Chair, I have the information here. If Russell, you wanted to read from it?
No, it was just a memory lapse, something that happens to us all.
Okay.
True.
Thank you, Mrs. Botwin. Is there anything that you wanted to bring out on it?
Yes, I wanted to mention that they did, the 7-Eleven committee did recommend selling the property to create a fund for the employee-assisted housing, but that was after, and it was on the bottom of the paragraph right above this. It said the committee had considered two other options that included future use by San Luis High School and leaving the property as is, open spaces. So there were two other options they considered, but they settled on the recommendation because it's believed to be a pathway to assist the district in one of the future areas of concern, employee housing. So, and when I went back and read that again, I thought, well, okay, they came to that decision.
Well, $5,000 assistance with closing costs and down payment, you know, the whole gamut exists out there.
It's important to remember that during the 7-Eleven recommendations, which we'll be reporting in more detail, we discussed extensive numbers of different ways to utilize that property. And ultimately, we settled on producing revenue, and we had three methodologies of doing that, and we prioritize that. We make the recommendation to the board. The board can discuss and dissect and put it together and utilize it in any way they want. But Mr. Parker is absolutely correct that when we look at what our future holds in terms of retirees, extensive number of retirees, how are we going to replace them and hold them? There is no question that we will be able to hire young teachers straight out of college, but how long can we keep them without giving them the opportunity for housing in our community? And that is where the idea sprang from in terms of employee-assisted housing. With our assets that we have extensive monetary values in those assets. We think that one of our primary concerns for the next 5 years ought to be how to not only recruit, but retain young teachers for the future. I don't think anybody would argue with the premise that a successful organization, district, business, or otherwise, is built on consistency of quality employees. And we can hire quality employees, but can we assure ourselves that we'll maintain consistency of those employees? And I think the clear answer to that is not without some access to housing.
And I like that, and I agree with that very much. And I think that after looking at the article that was here in the book, I took it over to my neighbor, who is a broker and a realtor, and I asked her if she would look it over and give me some input. And because these things, okay, whatever you say, you know, it does make, I'm not versed in it. And she said there were lots, as you I'm sure know, to deal with something like this, to work it out where the district doesn't get burned, that the teacher leaves after 3 years and you're stuck with a contract in the house and so on, et cetera, et cetera. She said all those things would have to be worked out. It'd be overwhelming. That wouldn't it be a good idea to find another way, a little simpler way to help? Like you mentioned, with deposit on housing costs, down payment, and things like that. And I did hear from somebody else that Cal Poly has a wonderful van system that you mentioned in your report. A van system that not only does the students use quite extensively, but the faculty use it to go back and forth. So I like this idea, but I don't want us to limit it just to this idea only. I'd like to see us broaden what other areas we could give them. And also, how many do we expect? The district's been wonderful over the years in hiring seasoned teachers with 5 or 10 or 15 years experience, many who come selling a house before they come here. So how many at this point in time, where would the priorities be? We'd have to see what they would need to help out.
Mr. Unger, I think. Thank you, Mr. Unger. You had your mic.
Yeah, there are a couple of things. First thing that I think that I would like to present to the public is we've had a lot of discussion this evening about the 7-Eleven committee, and I would ask if either Mr. Parker or Mr. Miller could just briefly explain what the 7-Eleven committee is and why it's necessary for us to engage in this process, and then I have a couple of questions.
Would you mind also indicating, did we have a teacher on the 7-Eleven committee?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
It's one of the requirements of the makeup of the committee to have the teacher, the community member, businessman, staff member, and those kinds of things. 7-Eleven committee is a government code requirement that should a district desire to dispose of property, it first has to have public meetings about the disposition of that property with a recommendation to the school board generated by the 7-Eleven committee. The 7-Eleven committee gets its name from the fact that the government code requires it to have at least 7 members and less than 11. So that's where you get the 7-Eleven. In the makeup of those 7 to 11 members, there's a very definite membership that has to be represented, and we covered all of that. We have very definite steps that we have to take in terms of offering it to other public agencies, offering it for public bid, and you know, notwithstanding the Garcia's interest in purchasing this property and relieving the Toro Creek, it was also a subject of the 7-Eleven committee. Ultimately, we have very prescribed methodologies for disposing of that property, which doesn't include entering into private negotiations with individual interested in purchasing it. So we will be bringing those to the board, and the recommendations were after
to anybody that's watching out there. I know that when we discuss employee-assisted housing or employer-assisted housing, the first thing that pops into folks' heads is that the school district would help out teachers to fulfill their housing needs. And I wanted to point out that this is employer-assisted housing, and that this my understanding is that this would be not only for the certificated staff, but also for the classified staff as well. And am I correct in that? And I'd like to make that very clear that this is...
That would be a board decision. Yeah. Other agencies have identified employee groups that perhaps represent a higher priority for the district mm-hmm. to report to okay. Recruit than others, but that's entirely a board discussion.
Okay. And when we get to that, I have some strong feelings about that. So the board would decide then who decides who takes advantage of a program like this?
Absolutely.
Given if we were talking about, say, $5 million, about how many people do you think could participate in something like this?
Well, if we averaged assistance of about $75,000 per employee, it would be about 67 employees.
Okay. And just another couple of things. I'm just curious. I'm sort of thinking about what Mrs. Botwin's talking about. Would we become the first trust deed holders for the first 5 years?
We'd be a co-owner.
Okay, so we'd be co-owners of the home.
Right.
And then we would have to decide what happens if the houses go upside down and things
Absolutely.
Like that?
All those things would be extremely important to have worked out in order to protect the district's interests, but there would be a worst-case scenario, the opportunity where we would step in and take over ownership of the property.
Okay,
but there would be many steps before we would get to that point. There is a downside possibility. We're entering into some new territory, but it's secured by real property in an area that is generally considered to be okay. pretty desirable. While there might be a leveling or downturn in the market, perhaps there won't be as well.
Okay, so really what we're talking about here is just kind of a rollout of this, and nothing specific.
Until the board gives some direction to staff to proceed with some concept or some notion, we don't want to get into the specifics of what it really is going to look like. There would be many opportunities for further discussion about the fine points of what this would actually appear like.
To be real clear about it, staff's intent is to roll out some ideas for your digestion and perhaps feedback at this point, but it clearly is at this moment something that has to be tied
to a revenue source in the future. And you haven't done that yet for us, but we have recommendations coming to you from the 7-Eleven committee, which will be agendized at the earliest opportunity, and we will have that recommendation for you at that time. Tonight is to explore in open session this idea of employee-assisted housing, which you guys have endorsed in the past and which you continue to show interest in. And then if you don't have interest in it, tell us now. We'd be happy to have that. But at this point, we want to tie together the revenue source with the recommendation about employee-assisted housing. It comes in the future, not too distant, but comes in the future.
Okay. Does anyone, Mrs. Pontman?
Yes, I had a number of questions, and since I, number one, I'd like you to come back if the rest of the board supports me with other ideas of how we could assist these people. And you mentioned something earlier, anything along that line, down payment on a or assisted, whatever it was you mentioned, Brad, I forget. What was it?
Well, there are a whole range of possible ways.
All right, because I please come back with other things. I find this particularly scary.
Mrs. Baldwin,
yeah.
Could I get, just to be real clear about this, I don't want to disappoint the board in what we would be coming back with, but what I hear from you is you want to hear a range of opportunities that we could engage the district in assisting employees in their housing. And that would not necessarily be our recommendation, but we an advancement of ideas. And then what we would end up as staff providing, as we always do, a recommendation about what we feel is the best alternative for that, and you would operate off of that recommendation.
Yes, I particularly, okay. I get, after reading over this and talking to people, Russell, I got really scared that, first of all, we're going to sell a piece of land in the center of our campus to somebody who's going to do something with it, and or to put up housing there, right in the middle of our San Luis High campus, right below the junior high school. This is the property you're talking about, right? Okay, and then
you're
going to do
it's
that.
It's not in the center of the campus. It's on the periphery. It's on the edge. It's on Johnson Avenue and San Luis Avenue. It doesn't touch anything in the middle.
Well, it touches a parking lot, and it touches...
Ms. Baldwin, one of the, if you remember about 4 months ago, we brought to you a consultant who's an expert in property development, and you guys explored different scenarios with that consultant, and you will continue to do that. It's not, as you say, our area of expertise to answer all of these types of questions, but we do have access to people who will, and this is a very complex and you know, it's a deep problem that we have to address properly. We're not going to take risks with district assets under any stretch of the imagination.
Oh, yeah, I understand that, and I realize we encouraged you to bring this kind of thing because we are seriously concerned about the level of the housing and the cost. But after reading over this document and realizing what we'd have to do in order to do that, I'm just wondering if there aren't other ways that we could help.
There's multiple ways.
Yes.
And those will be brought as you requested.
That's what I would like.
We'll look
I'd like
those.
To see
no
others.
Problem.
Okay, thank you. I think Mrs. Roger is next.
Okay, well, I just wanted to say that I find all of this very exciting. I think this is, I'm thrilled that we're looking at this. And that it's coming forward is something that is a real possibility. And the logistics of it can be worked out so long as the board is committed to assisting our employees in recruiting and retaining good employees as a board goal. Then the rest of it, you know, we have very bright people working with us. Brad's not going to leave us open to exposure. Russell's not going to leave us open to exposure, and we have access to all kinds of professionals who can help to structure something. So the logistics of how it's structured is something for the future. I think what we're looking at right now is a conceptual is committing as a board to the concept that this is something that we want to actively pursue, and I certainly do. I am with Mr. Unger in believing that our discussions, our past discussions, have not been limited to teachers. but that we have talked about, including other district employees. And so in going forward, though I'm very mindful of the value of teachers and the number of teachers we will be losing in the next 5 years, we have other employees as well that potentially possibly could benefit from a program such as this. So to me, it's just really thrilling, and I'm glad it came forward tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Roger. Mrs. Dickinson?
Changes keep happening, and families, how do communities, you know, make decisions about land use? We see that with the Toledo situation. And how do families make decisions about housing? I see a lot of people in my children's generation with different expectations. You know, my son owns a home, and he has two roommates at all times helping him to pay the payments. And we didn't really think we had to do that when we were younger. So times are changing, and demographics are changing. We have 1% of the population who owns most of the wealth in the country, and we have a bigger split between the rich and the poor, and that's affecting everything. So everything is, you know, times are different, and we have to look at things differently. And I'm with Mrs. Botwin on, like, you know, I personally like a green space around a high school, and if it were just up to me, I would keep the green open space. And I think that's a benefit to the students that should not be overlooked, having that space in the room, emotionally and psychologically and spiritually and everything else, having a little room. However, you know, good teachers who stay in the district and other employees, but teaching is extremely significant in education, to stay and you know, become wonderful mentors for years and years of students. That is something that we need. So we sort of have to make compromises and give up some things here and there in life. And it's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. So, you know, I see that we may have to give up our green space in order to have teachers be able to, and other staff, custodians, be able to afford houses here. And those are tough decisions. And so we're all looking at those things. But I, for one, am willing to look at it, and I think it's a positive thing, like Marilyn is saying. It's a good thing to consider.
Thank you, Mrs. Dickinson. Mr. Unger?
Yeah, and I think what I'm feeling that the question before the board tonight is looking at employer-assisted housing something that this board would like the staff to continue to look at. Is that not the question? And I would support the staff continuing to look at that and developing ways that we can assist our employees. I think that
creative ideas about how to recruit individuals, but no financial kinds of ideas were available at that time. We now have a financial idea available to address that critical issue of recruitment and retention. I think part of what Brad shared tonight that was very critical were the assumptions of what would make this particular proposal feasible. And he gave us ballpark figures for us to take a look at. And I think one of the things the board will want to do as this becomes more and more concrete is to examine very closely those assumptions and get to a level of comfort that you have that the assumptions mirror the reality that we're trying to address. A second kind of threshold question that the board is going to have to deal with is that obviously the funding of this particular notion involves the selling of property, and there is the decision as to what the future needs for those properties might be, because at the point we convert them into employer-assisted housing options, they cease to be properties of the school district. And those are questions that the board will want to deal with. Mrs. Botwin raises the issue as well that if we sell the property, are we comfortable with the results that come from the use of the property afterwards? And that's something else that the board will want to look at. In the questions that I'm hearing about what employees would be eligible for this kind of assistance, I think that's a parallel conversation that the board will want to have to make sure that there are clearly defined purposes for the concept of employer-assisted housing, and that what we do with the money is consistent with those purposes, because it began, as this conversation comes back to the beginning, to the idea of addressing the critical issue of recruiting and retaining employees. If it becomes simply a gesture in making housing more affordable for existing employees, it's a possible reason, but it wouldn't accomplish our purpose of addressing recruiting and retaining new employees. So methods for doing that would be very, very important. All of that said, it's just ideas at this point, and I share the excitement that there will be great conversations that follow with an idea that I think very few people have brought forward in public schools.
And just to add my two cents, I've been reflecting back on some of the things we've done since I have been on the board, and I think we have pioneered in several ways in this district in placing a priority on our people rather than our properties. And I think we all do recognize that it is the strength of our staff, our teaching staff, our custodial staff, our counseling staff, our administrative staff, our classified, all of them, that makes the district. And really, we have placed that priority by closing some of our schools so that we could give better salaries to our employees. And I think there is a thread, since I've been on the board, of recognizing that that is the paramount thing that makes it a quality school district. And I think these discussions are consistent with what we have been doing. And I know the details are a little bit daunting, but we did some things that other districts haven't done in terms of charging for transportation and closing schools and consolidating schools, and these things have worked out well. So the mere fact that we're the first to do it, I don't think should be enough to cause the process to stop. It sort of has to play out its course, and it may lead to something that is very workable, and I hope it does. Mrs. Baldwin.
Thank you. I want to just mention a couple of things that I was very gung-ho about this when we first started talking about it, and I'm still gung-ho, but not quite as much after reading over all the potential things that are involved here. And looking at it, trying to back off and look at it, it's sort of a Band-Aid approach to a systemic problem that teachers need to be better paid. And that, in a nutshell, is a problem. And not just teachers, but a lot of people. But particularly in this case because of our situation. And another situation, too, you have in here, Brad, something that I like. You have, we have to make sure equitable treatment of employees. So that means there is always going to be some selected, some not. You said 67 employees, we could help them with home purchases. And when I called you today, you gave me the information that we have right now, presently, 43 teachers under 5 years teaching experience. So right off the bat, there's 43 to start with. And, you know, that's why after all of these things, I'm thinking there are other ways. Let's look at other ways. And I have a last, Russell, you'll like this idea if you don't get up and shoot me. This last idea, let's take that Avila Beach thing. We ended up with, 22 potential condos.
Mr. Parker, to continue exploring this.
Yes.
Okay. And then if there's something else with one of the other properties, do you want to bring it up with advance agenda, Mrs. Botwin?
Sure.
Okay. Number six. Del Mar drainage easement and retaining wall fence improvements. We did this last time, so.
You were going to ask for any comments from the public also.
I was. Did anyone want to speak? I'm sorry if I didn't see any hands go up, but. Brad, we had this last time, so I'm going to ask you if you want to make this one short, unless any board members forget that this was that win-win, right?
Yes, and we addressed Mr. Spadafore's concerns and the typo that you pointed out.
Okay.
And it's been reviewed by our council, and we think it's a good
Anybody
solution.
Have any concerns before we have a this is an action item, so
yeah,
we could have a motion.
Madam Chair, Brad, the John Spadafore made that comment about hold harmless clause is adequate protection for all of us.
Yeah, he was concerned about derivative liability, and
right.
Ty Green inserted some language in addition to the language that was already in the contract specifically about derivative liability.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a motion?
I would move for approval of item number six.
Second?
I'll second.
Motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Number 7 is an action discussion item from Damian Barnett on our consolidated application for funding categorical programs.
Good evening. The California Department of Education requires the consolidated application for funding categorical aid programs Part 1 to be submitted by June of each year. This comprehensive application covers programs described in the 2006-2007 consolidated program summary. At this time, the state budget has not been approved. Instead of projecting possible new funds, the CE suggests that we use this year's funding levels and we follow this direction, knowing that changes may have to be made after the state budget is finalized. It's a pretty routine item. I would just highlight one change that is different from past years, and that's in how we report the poverty rate of our schools, and that's calculated by the number of free and reduced lunch applications. And we used to report that district-wide, and what happens is when we perform that calculation, the schools are then ranked, you know, by the highest to the lowest in the entire district. And this year we're reporting it by grade span. And really, that is for two reasons. One is that the consolidated application is a program, and what happens is that once the schools are ranked, you select which schools will be receiving Title I funding, and it's been the historical background from the district to support K-6 elementary with Title I funds. And if you look on in the consolidated application, you'll see that the second highest poverty rate in the district is at Pacific Beach High School. And close behind that are approaching the 35% threshold is Los Osos Middle School and Monarch Grove Elementary School. So it's really just a changing demographic in the district as a whole. And so it's created a change in the way we report it. And it doesn't change any way that we deliver services. We still are supporting K-6 Elementary. The current Title I schools are still our Title I schools. It's just a slight change in the application that I thought you should take note.
Thank you. Mrs. Dickinson?
Does that mean that Pacific Beach, though, will get a little bigger share of Title I funds, or no?
Pacific Beach will not receive Title I funds because, again, our Title I funding goes to K-6 Elementary.
Yeah, that's what I thought you just said.
Right, and Pacific Beach already receives extra resources from the district to support their program. They have a higher staff-level funding than other ways. And so
we compensate them. Okay.
That's right.
That sounds good.
Mr. Unger?
Yeah, just a quick note that you might want to check page 7.23. I noticed a little spelling error on that page. And I was curious about at what threshold elementary school falls into the Title I realm, because I was looking at Monarch Grove, and I believe we're saying 34.2% of the students there would qualify, and I know that it's pushing Monarch real close, especially since it's, I believe, one of our EL sites as well, is it not? So,
one spelling error, and I think you submitted like 400 pages of documents tonight. That's not bad. That is not bad.
Yeah, I would hate to have us go to the state spelling, you know, monsters and have them throw it back at us or something.
No, I appreciate that.
Okay. Does anyone else have any questions or comments, Mrs. Botwin?
You've obviously read over all of this, and it has your full approval. Is that correct?
Oh, I've had the extreme joy of familiarizing myself entirely with this district.
All right, because you make me feel better, because I didn't read every page. But there were a couple of pages, Damon, that were crossed out, and I wondered, it had to be a reason for it. One was Attachment A, Student Information Card in English. And if we had a page number, it would be page 37.
Whatever you prefer. Well,
okay, I'd just like to introduce this. This is the No Child Left Behind Act of 2001 mandates that each local education agency, which is the LEA, develop an LEA plan, and by meeting this requirement, receive federal and state funding. And we're required to update the plan annually and present it to the board for approval. So what you have is the updated LEA plan. And
they just draw lines then to it. There's three or four pages that have lines to it.
Yeah, what you see is that anything that's been deleted has been, the lines are through it, it's been struck. So if there's an entire document with lines through it, it means it's been replaced by another document. And so there'll be another document where the lines should be underlined.
Is this sort of a red line so that we can see where the changes have been made?
Correct.
Okay.
The document is so large and it's so easy to get lost in it that I wanted to make sure that you could see just where the changes were, since since you've seen this document for many years. And again, I would just say that really the notable changes in this document are in the English Learner Master Plan, and Regina McEwen is here, and she's worked hard on that plan if you have any specific questions. But I would also just highlight that one of the big changes in the EL Master Plan is that we no longer have what we in the past called cluster sites. And so where sites were identified as specifically serving our EL students, now all of our schools serve EL students, and all of our schools have the resources to do that. And that's really been a change, I think, in the district over time, as more and more families are choosing to send their students to their neighborhood school and not wanting to travel, you know, to a specific school that's been designated to have certain resources. And so a big part of our work and part of the strategic plan, of course, has been to bring the resources to each site so that students don't have to go to a specific cluster site. I would say another big change in the EL Master Plan is that the criteria for reclassification of English learner students has been changed. And the main change has been that we've raised the bar in terms of where a student should be scoring on the CSTs. It used to be just simply stated as basic, and now we're targeting mid-basic or above because, again, as we mentioned in the strategic plan, we see some students that become reclassified from the EL program, and they sort of stay in that basic level. And so we wanted to make sure that those students are ready, and so we've sort of raised the bar about when they should be reclassified, and then we've also put greater emphasis on monitoring those students who have been reclassified to make sure that they're successful as they go on.
Thank you for just focusing on those changes. So we're offering more services, and we're raising the bar a bit. Anybody have anything else? Mrs. Dickinson?
I think Mr. Unger wanted to talk first.
Go ahead, Mr. Unger.
Well, just a couple of things. I noticed on page 44, one of the things that I think is most interesting about NCLB is a requirement that 100% of our English learners get to the proficient or advanced classification by 2014. And I think every member of this board and every member of this community absolutely supports academic standards and strong academic proficiency by our students. However, recognizing that I can't change it, I still want to state that I think that thinking that 100% of students, some of whom may have come from freshly minted from outside of the United States, not speaking English, to expect that they will magically transform within a year is unrealistic. And I also would say the same thing referring to pages 74 and 77, talking about 0% of threat assessments, which is absolutely laudable. We don't want to ever have threat assessments. This is something that is disturbing to the board and that the board has a great deal of concern about. However, as people say, we're public schools, we can't control who walks through our door, and we want to serve our students as best we can. And I want to know how we could even plan that we could get 0% of threat assessments. And then thinking about something I read on page, I believe it was number 88, where we talk about school resource officers, a concern that I have is that I know that Morro Bay High School doesn't have a dedicated resource officer like San Luis Obispo High School does, and I think that might be something we want to look at for the future, especially if we're talking about threat assessments. And then finally, I just want to say that I think that this document validates that our strategic plan is on the right track, especially when we talk about our English learner gap and our achievement gap. And when we consider that the number of our English learners are increasing and our general population is decreasing, so we're seeing actually the percentage of English learners increasing in our schools here in San Luis, and so that even is more validation that we're on the right track, I think, with our resources.
Okay, thank you. Mrs. Botwin stepped out for... Oh, Mrs. Dickinson, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was talking to Mr. Barnett at our cake break about this. 300 pages here that the school district has prepared. You know, I was asking him how many hours of his time. He's talking hundreds of hours.
Not just my time. It's a lot of people's time. Yeah, this
yes.
is a lot
yes,
of people.
Right.
Yeah.
Not just your time, but yeah, we clarified that it was many people.
I've seen the light
people.
Of day in the last couple of weeks.
By year 2014, every student will test, 100% of students will test at a proficient level, counting students with learning disabilities, students who don't speak English, and all kinds of other problems. So the federal government has set up a system where all schools will fail. And I just wanted to bring up, in Democracy Now! Today, you know, Tuesday, June 20th, All the New Orleans public school teachers were fired. 7,500 teachers and employees after Katrina, and they are turned over to private charter organizations. And I think that is the agenda when they have a chance. If that's what this administration, and this administration is a very broad term. It's in three houses now, three sections of our government. But it's an effort to privatize everything. So if you can set up a bill like No Child Left Behind, where all the schools will fail, and they're all program improvement, and then they have to be, you know, reorganized and turned over to someone else, you know, that's a horrifying concept. And we, in the middle of it, are trying to meet goals while they still are somewhat attainable, because we're in the part where, we can, if we work really hard, we can meet these goals. And now we only have one school, a stellar school, that's called a program improvement school. So we've had to do a lot of things, and we are doing good things, but districts would have done many of these good things. And as we talked about, the one good thing, the best thing that's come out of it is the interest in each student. School districts no longer overlook students. They want every child to, you know, have the best education possible and improve. But even that goal is at risk as we move toward ever more impossible goals, because it's a frustration level with reaching goals that are absolutely impossible. So even the benefits are going to be undermined eventually. This is up for reauthorization soon. Does anybody know what year, Dr. Valentine? Soon. It's pretty soon. And hopefully, and you know, NEA and all kinds of people are lobbying and have had meetings and have very specific suggestions for how to keep the benefit truly for helping every child to get better, because that's a laudable goal that we all can get behind. But I just think it's a dilemma that you're doing very well with and we all keep struggling with. But we might as well look at it clearly for what it is, too, and not pretend that it's something else.
Okay, thank you. Let's have a motion on the LEA. Okay, motion by Mrs. Dickinson to accept the LEA plan. Second? Second by Mrs. Botwin. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. And number 9 is the Foster Youth Family Services Resource Program Update. This is a discussion or just an informational item from Jackie Kirk-Martinez.
Actually, I'm going to introduce Melissa Musgrave, our Foster Youth Family Services Coordinator. But before I do, I just wanted to say that last year when you approved this position, there was a vision, and now there's accomplishments behind it that far surpassed my expectations. And Melissa is going to give you a brief update of this year's accomplishments.
Okay, I'm Melissa Musgrave. I'm the Family Services Resource Coordinator for the school district. I did a PowerPoint, if you can see it. Tonight I'll be discussing briefly AB 490, which is our foster youth, and McKinney-Vento Act, which helps our homeless youth, and SafeSoc, which is a countywide program. Okay. The Foster Youth Family Services Resource Program, part of my position, coordinates as an educational liaison while I attend, collaborate, and coordinate services between schools, families, agencies for our homeless and foster youth. I also complete LEA and MA billing, and I coordinate the SafeSoc program, which I said was a countywide program, but we've been elaborating within our school district to help at-risk students. AB 490, which is the Foster Youth Assembly Bill, our largest accomplishment was creating the MOU with the nonprofit foster care agency, which is Family Care Network. And by doing that, as foster students are placed throughout the county and there's no transportation for them to get to school, they were missing between 2 and 10 days in other districts, and now they're missing 0 days. So Family Care Network provides that transportation so that if they're placed in emergency placement up in Paso Robles, they will be at school the next day. So that was our biggest accomplishment for AB 490. McKinney-Vento Act, which is the Homeless Act, which is a federal. Safe SOC is Services Affirming Family Empowerment System of Care. That program is a countywide program that each school district works with a variety of agencies. So the agencies that San Luis Coastal works with here throughout our district, we have two locations, one here in Morro Bay, and one at Laguna Middle School, that we work with mental health, probation, EOC, Department of Social Services, Drug and Alcohol, the Homeless Shelter, and Public Health Department. And it acts as an intervention and prevention for our at-risk students, so the schools and mental health and other agencies can make referrals to this group, and we kind of brainstorm ideas to see why different issues are happening. And the goal of all of this is to keep students safe, healthy, at home, in school, and out of trouble. And if you have any questions or want me to elaborate on anything...
I do have a question, and thank you for the report. How long has it been since we started this? Has it been a year already?
October,
okay. I didn't think it was quite a year,
no.
But you've accomplished a lot. Now, in identifying the 150 homeless students, is that in addition to others that were already identified, or do you think that you've got the all the students identified? I mean, where is that in terms of the total picture of how many homeless students in our district, do you think?
The number originally started out about 43, and I think as teachers and staff and personnel get a better understanding of the definition of McKinney-Vento, that it may even be a larger number.
Okay. So do we have 150 in addition to the 43?
No, 150 total.
150 total have been identified. And, you know, that's just fantastic that you're working to help them and reduce that amount of school that they miss. It's wonderful. Anybody? Thank you so much, Ms. Musgrave. Mrs. Botwin wants to say something, too?
Yes, please. Thank you, Melissa. We really look forward to your coming, and now we're really happy with what we have done. These are a lot of little cracks we have, and you seem to be doing very well in filling all these cracks. Okay, the only question I have is, I thought we allocated a person for Ma. That does that fall under her filling the cracks?
We added
Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, we added a MA clerk to assist with the accumulation of data and the submissions for reimbursements, with the understanding that it would increase those collections greater than the salary of the person doing it. Melissa is operating at another level to coordinate community services, and some of those services actually are reimbursable through MA.
Okay, so you're not running the whole program, the MA program?
No, I actually just, my services are billable.
Okay, that's excellent. Thank you. We need you for what you're doing, and thank you very much.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Okay, we'll go to the action consent. Do you want to vote on anything on action consent? Okay.
Is Robert here?
All right. Thanks for coming tonight.
Is Robert here?
We're almost done. Unless you want to use it to walk out to the door.
No.
You know, it's great. It's got
weird. Are we going to have any vote problems with just four board members, do you think?
No.
Okay, good.
Good night, Adrian.
Good night, Adrian. Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Okay, number 10, approval of certificated and classified. Anybody want to pull? Number 11, approval of...
Pull
11, Mrs. Yes. Botwin. That's the approval of the internship contract with Chapman University. 12 is acceptance of donations. 13, destruction of Class 3 records. 14, approval of purchase orders. 15 is an action on a claim against the district, which we discussed earlier in closed session. Number 16 is approval. Pull 16.
Please.
Approval of international student exchange program. And 17 is summer field trip and study trips. I'm just going to comment that looks better than what we had last time.
Yeah.
But it's not pulled. And 18 is the Carl Perkins Vocational Educational Act application prepared by PAC Beach. Number 19 is the approval of the SLO High School Ag Vocational Ed Incentive and Specialized Grant Applications. So do we have a motion for the consent agenda with the exception of 11 and 16?
I move approval of item 10, 12 through 15, and 17 through 19.
I second.
Motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mrs. Botwin. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It passes 4-0, and we'll note that Mrs. Dickinson did.
If she would give us the numbers of the exchange students that we presently have, and maybe over the past few years, because I think we've done and are doing a wonderful job. Mary, would you mind giving us that information?
Thank you, Mrs. Bowen. Yes, we have currently applications for 06-07 to 17 students coming to our school district. In 01-02, we had 9 students, so we've seen an increase over the last several years in the number of applications.
Actually, it's wonderful. We've almost doubled. You don't know offhand. Would you let us know, maybe just in the Friday packet, how many of our kids go for the exchange programs to other countries? Just the number.
I'm not aware of our students going to in exchange programs, but I'll look into it with our secondary
principal. Oh, I thought we had a program with a
We have a German study
German?
Program, yes.
Yeah.
We have one program that I'm aware of, but I'll check with the high school principal.
Okay, you. Thank you.
Anything else, Mrs. Botwin?
No.
Do you want to make a motion then?
Yes, I want to move approval of the International Student Exchange Program for 2006-2007.
Second.
Motion by Mrs. Botwin, second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Passes 4-0. Okay, the next is the advance agenda. Anybody?
Yeah.
Mrs. Botwin?
Yeah, a couple of things here that we didn't get on that we were going to get on before. Add to it the review of the process for evaluations of non-tenured employers. Ed, I think you had jotted that down before that was going to go on an advance agenda.
Yeah, I'm trying to think whether that was an update item. Does the board recall? I listed it as an update item, I know, in the weekly update.
Okay, we can start with that, and then go, if that's not successful.
Yeah, it's on our list.
Okay, thank you. It's on the list. And then the other one was the future discussion down the road. We want to put on the list of music and PE being placed on an ongoing budget instead of one-time funds. But maybe we should wait till the budget goes through at this point and see what we get, even though it's going to be lump sum type money, and then look at that and when we have the rest of the board.
So you want it noted for something
future,
after the state budget?
Yes, after the state budget, we'll look at a future discussion of music and PE being placed on ongoing budget instead of a year-to-year.
And was there a second board member that wanted that on the agenda? I can't remember.
Adrienne told me over the phone that she was seconding that.
Okay. So yep. Then that'll be two members that want that on the agenda.
Yes.
Okay, anything else? Then let's go to Dr.
If I might, we had talked about the possibility of putting contract ratifications on July 18th. Again, that would be an item that would concur with the board retreat. I'm beginning to lose my memory here, too. There was something else we were talking about bringing forward on the 18th. Selection of board president. So we're beginning to build an agenda in addition to the evaluation.
No, we've done that. We took care of that, Ed.
That's right. Thank you. What time is it?
So the only thing to be added then would be the ratifications.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
All right. How about board member and district administrator reports? Dr. Valentine.
I'm sorry. When we follow the adjournment, I'd like to invite any the board, obviously, to stay, but any of the audience as well, when we swear in David Peter, effective at 12:01 a.m. tomorrow as a new board.
We don't have to keep him here till 12:01?
We don't have to keep him here. We will add that phrase into the swearing in. And anyway, we'll just ask everyone to stay. We'll do it post-adjournment because it's not an agenda item and doesn't need to be.
Ah, great.
So it's not an agenda item that we okay.
It doesn't require any board action. It's done by the superintendent, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I move we adjourn.
Well, we still have our board reports. Okay. I know I want to talk about Governor Schwarzenegger, but I bet Mr. Unger does too.
That wasn't what I was going to talk about, and I just wanted to say what a thrill and an honor it was to be able to go to all three graduations this year and to see the culmination of my son's 13 years in San Luis Coastal Unified School District,
okay,
knowing that he is moving on and going to college. And just to thank every single person that's been involved in the education of my son and really the education of me as well and my wife.
It's all the good stuff. 1 week in which we have the opportunity to experience three individual graduation ceremonies, and they are quite different one from another. The Pacific Beach graduation is very moving, very personal. The teachers really bond with the students. It's a small group. They're champions, the kids. It's very special. The Morro Bay High School graduation is always great. That's my home school. It's a little more casual and relaxed than San Luis. I'm not sure how San Luis gets all those pigeons, but at the end they release from some secret place that they have all these pigeons, and you perceive them as doves. But they're pigeons, Chris, but you perceive them as doves. Are they doves?
Ask Mr. Miller.
They're pigeons, aren't they, Mr. Miller? And they move, and they're like the Blue Angels, and then they take off, and it's just fabulous. It's so beautiful. I'm going to try to figure out how to get that for Morro Bay. Yeah, pigeons in my backyard. Don't tell Bob Roger. But I feel like this year I really need to say that, you know, in the years that I do the three graduations, it is for me such a special, wonderful thing, and I really am able to do it because my employer is generous in allowing me to have the time off, and my work does suffer a little bit for it. So I want to thank Miner's Ace Hardware for honoring my commitment to my school board responsibilities and allowing me to participate. Thank you.
I'd like to just say what a nice welcome Sinsheimer School and Principal Joyce Hunter gave to the governor. The students were incredible. They were so impressive, and it was wonderful to see them speak with the governor and how poised they were and how excited they were. And one student gave the most incredible address. I wish I could remember her name right now, but fifth, sixth grader?
A fifth grader.
First name was Ariana.
Ariana,
I
yeah.
The last one.
Amazing. Just sat there and spoke to, you know, a row of cameras and with the governor behind her. I think he had to have been just delighted and impressed by the staff and the students at Sinsheimer School. It was just a couple days before school let out, and they graciously gave him an art lesson, let him paint a flower. And I think one of the things that stayed with me that he said was that every time someone in his family has a birthday or a special event, he paints their card himself. And I thought that was kind of lovely to picture the governor sitting down and making his own card for his family. And those are the little things that you get. It's easy to be cynical about a politician coming and using your school for a photo op. But there is something very nice about actually hearing a governor talk about painting a card for his children. And he was very respectful and very sweet to our children. And, of course, he plugged his budget items that he wants to have the legislature pass. And I, for one, was extremely, you know, la-di-da at first about meeting him, but it was quite exciting to see him come in and talk about his budget. I thought he really spoke with sincerity about the importance of education, and we can only hope that this is more in line with his true values than what he did in the special election. So give him another chance at least to make this budget work.
What about your daughter?
Well, I could say something about my daughter, and I will. My wonderful daughter graduated from SLO High. And, you know, I know I should say how brilliant she is, but all I can say is that I was just amazed at how beautiful and how grown up. And they transform. They put on those robes and those tassels, and suddenly they really do feel like adults. And it's just fantastic to see it and to know that they're on their way out to adventures.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Mrs. Botwin, and then Dr. Valentine.
I just wanted to say that I enjoyed very much Pacific Beach, and I have the yearbook that I want to bring at the next meeting and pass it around. They do a beautiful yearbook every year. And the in the yearbook...
And they're not shy about trying to sell it either.
No, they are not at all shy about trying to sell it and raise money, but the in the yearbook they had a classic car for one of the students. It was a 1958... something. And I 57 Chevy, and I was looking at that picture thinking, and it kept saying, old, it's an old, old class, and I kept going, oh, no, 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 this was a car that I got when I was in high school, or something very like it. But anyhow, then afterward, I loved Arnold's accent. And I wish I could imitate it. But I spent more time listening to his accent, which was wonderful, than I did to what he said. Although I felt that there was a lot of sincerity in that he wants to get for us added income for our PE and our music. And I believe that. Thank you.
I'm going to say one more thing before I go to Dr. Valentine, because I forgot something relating to graduation. Thank you, thank you, thank you to all the parents who worked on the grad nights. Oh. I don't think we had an incident, did we? The whole purpose of the grad night is to keep our kids safe.
Actually, you can just repeat after me.
Does anybody have a camera? Would you like someone to take a picture?
Well, isn't it still on the video?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
But do you want a snapshot, Dave?
Yeah. Just
on the white one. Mayor, do you... Where's the flag? Where's the flag? Way back there.
Madam Chair, whenever you would like us to begin, we will.
I think we're finished with all the... I'm not the chair. Oh, yes, you are.
You still are.
Do you want me up there? No.
Actually, I...
Do you want... Let's get a greeting section around there.
If you would like to form a...
Or you get up. Yeah, let's all get up there.
An audience.
Oh,
come on, guys. Yes. Yeah, whatever.
Come on in closer. That's fine. We got one more, Chris.
He's giving me
you can just rank. Great. Welcome, everybody. Right hand raised. I, David W. Peter, do solemnly affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States,
that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States,
and the Constitution of the State of California,
and the Constitution of the State of California,
against all enemies,
Against all enemies.
Foreign and domestic.
Foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
To the Constitution of the United States.
To the Constitution of the United States.
And the State of California.
And the State of California.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation.
Or purpose of evasion.
Or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
I will well and faithfully discharge.
The duties upon which I am about to enter.
The duties upon which I am about to enter.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Welcome.
That's great.